Welcome to Local Matters. We are in the studio today with someone I consider a restaurant icon, and that is JJ of Spanky's in Cookeville, Tennessee. And JJ, I've actually never known if your name is JJ or if JJ stands for something else. Would you tell the readers that?
Well, it stands for John Josephs, and it was just easier to say.
So yeah.
I got sort of stuck with the JJ.
I hear that. You know, you have something that all restaurant and bar owners hope and dream of, and that is longevity. I see bars come and go in the various places I've lived, like New York City and Chicago, and even in smaller towns, and some people just don't have a knack for it. When did you first open, and how many years have you had the space?
The best of my memory, we opened in 73. I came back from being in the Air National Guard and went back to school, decided I needed something else to do. So,
gotcha.
Saw this building and pursued it.
And so did you study the, were you in the hospitality, like studying that at school or not when you say?
No, I was actually a marketing major.
Well, okay.
So it had some similarity there, but I didn't know how to cook anything.
Gotcha.
Scrambled an egg, maybe.
Well, you know, in our previous edition on Spanky's that we had, talking with Steve Jones, who is sort of, in a way, a host, if you will, of the big party that takes place, dinner party at Spanky's, we talked about the fact that you have great, you know, business instincts. And I feel like a lot of people get into the restaurant business for the wrong reason. And that is because they are great throwing a party at home and they think they can just take that into a location and do the same thing, but they don't have the business instincts. And it seems to me you have great business instincts. Would you agree?
I don't know. I think I've had so many problems that I've gotten through that I've learned some lessons that other people just haven't gotten through.
Right, yeah.
And that's probably been the key.
Right.
But just common sense makes the best.
Common sense, yeah. Okay, yeah. I think in a way business instincts equals common sense. If you're running a business, that's what it really is just good common sense, you know. You know, if I remember it in its first years, I can remember a foosball table being there. I remember the Coca-Cola bottles always being there, but I may be wrong about that because I would have been in there as early as about 1974 when it really felt like it was a place you had created for, you know, college kids and high school kids that was a place to go and socialize that wasn't a bar, didn't have alcohol, for example.
Yeah, we when we first started out, it was before anything, it was actually a Chinese restaurant. We walked in the doors and all the walls were pink and Chinese globes everywhere.
Wow.
Four pink walls that were those big block walls.
Yes.
So we had to clean all that up and then we started with a deli. Basically had a deli case up in by the big front window. And had people walk in the door all the time and say, "What's a deli?"
Ah.
They had no idea.
Yeah.
Maybe I was a little ahead of myself. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, you were, I think, then, yeah. I mean, that's and you'd heard of delis, and you decided to call this a deli, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually worked in one in Knoxville so for the summer, and I said, well, I can do this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny that deli is short for delicatessen, and it has to do with the words delicious in a way. So you're providing items one by one that are delicious. Was that front counter that a typical deli counter? Was there an assortment of things to pick from?
It was a deli case full of meats and stuff, and we had steamers. It was a sandwich style that was made by Sam and Andy's in Knoxville.
Gotcha.
Where you'd slice the meat fresh, you'd put it on the bun, you would steam it, and with all kinds of good cheeses and stuff. Very popular sandwich.
I can't remember that. I remember foosball tables and Coca-Cola bottles. And for listeners that have not been to Spanky's that are from out of town, I think that actually is one of the things that they wind up taking pictures of now, that everybody posts something on Instagram or Twitter. I think locals kind of take that wall of Coca-Cola bottles for granted, and it's just sort of in our peripheral. But it's a great thing. You know, you're not literally divided from the next table. You can see through. And the odd thing is, they've never lost, they're airtight. They don't go, the Coca-Cola hasn't gone down in how many years. When did you put those in?
Gosh, that's been almost 30, 40 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
So they've been good for a long time.
They weren't there from the very beginning then, though, right?
Not that group that's there now.
Okay.
One time I tried to sell the restaurant to somebody, and that didn't work, and they knocked all the bottles out. So when I came back in, Coca-Cola was nice enough to find me more antique bottles.
No kidding.
And
wow.
So that was very unusual, and we had a hard time finding them because it's a lot of bottles.
It is. And do you know how many total?
I have no idea.
Yeah, yeah. That would be interesting to go and count how many, you know. I think that with restaurants coming and going, again, the word is longevity, and that's a restaurant owner's dream. And I'm here with JJ in the studio, who owns Spanky's in Cookeville. And why do you think your restaurant has lasted as long as it has? I think that it's simply that you have great business instinct, but I think it's also that you have made changes to the menu over the years without relying on gimmicks. For example, you've had several different menus, you know, literally have been a pizza place at one point, right?
Well, we started out with just basically sandwiches and grew from all kinds of things. From there, we went to pizza. We went to, back in the day, we had Spuds.
Yes.
And that was a huge hit.
Yeah.
It was a very popular thing at the time. And then from there, I had to teach myself how to cook. And we started doing regular plate lunches and stuff like that.
Right. And in our previous first part of this two-part series on Spanky's, we talked to Steve Jones, who said you really are a chef at heart. And while you mentioned earlier you didn't originally cook, you have become a chef of sorts. I didn't know until talking to Steve that in your travels around either the country or the world, you found great dishes and do a version of your own at the restaurant, which is a really great idea, I think.
Well, it's easy for me to try to replicate something that I've tasted before. And I try not to ever use anybody else's recipe. We just try to make our own. And it's sometimes similar and sometimes it's not similar at all.
Right, right, yeah.
But that's part of it, you know, and that's how I learned how to cook, is just by doing that simple system.
I am 58 and I'm still a lousy cook, and I figure I'm going to 110 years old and I'll learn eventually how to cook. So maybe I'll come to you later and ask you for some cooking lessons.
Sure, sure. We'll put you to work.
Well, you know, that maybe that's the way to do it, is jump in there and work. So, you know, you really are a no-nonsense guy at the core, who happens to have a wry and sly sense of humor. Would you agree that that goes a long way in being able to withstand the daily pressure of the business? Because to me, the restaurant business is one of intense high pressure, and yet you are one of the coolest, calmest cucumbers I've ever met.
You're not around me a lot. No, I'm not that cool. It's just one of those things. There's always something that you've got to do or fix, and you just got to be ready to go do it.
Right.
You know, and 99% of the time, there's not somebody there that you're hiring to do it. You got to do it yourself. So.
Right. But you present cool, which is kind of great. I've talked to people before who throw parties at home, and I've helped them throw a party, and I notice at the last minutes leading right up to guest arriving, they're in panic mode. They're spinning, spinning, spinning. All these last little details have to be taken care of. And I'll say to them, listen, the last thing a person wants is to walk into the house and see you stress. Why not drop three or four of these tasks that you thought you had to do so that when people arrive, they want to feel calm, you know, and relaxed. And that's what happens. So, you know, you may be behind the scenes the guy who's, you know, blowing a fuse, but in public, I've never seen you like that at all. You just are there. Kind of sometimes I don't even notice that you're there for the first hour, and you've been there the whole time. You're just on the sidelines watching the scene and what's going on, it seems like. You do that? Do you do that a lot, going to observe?
I try to just stay out of the way, basically. And just make sure everything's working perfectly.
Right. But you're there, right? I mean, you're actually there a lot, and it's just that, like you said, stay out of the way, Right.
You know, I got a great staff, and they do a good job, so I just let them do their job.
You know, Steve was mentioning in our previous installment on Spanky's that you picked him by saying, just come into work tonight. You know, that there was a moment that somebody left, and rather than him going through some training or something, you had met him before, and with your great business instinct, I think is an instinct for the right kind of staff to have. So you somehow knew he'd be right for the job, and when the time came, you hadn't actually called him ahead of time to say, come in for some training. And you called him when somebody failed to show up for a shift and said, can you come in tonight to work? Is that, do you recall that at all?
That's pretty well true.
Yeah.
You know, and it happens a lot in the business, because somebody won't show, or and you got to hire somebody else right away, and then you got to train somebody new. And
yeah.
That's just all part of the show, but. Steve's turned out to be one of the good ones.
Yes. Yeah. You know, one of my first jobs I had when I moved to New York City was working at a restaurant, and I had no experience at all. I'd worked in radio. I'd worked in libraries starting at age 10 as a volunteer and driven a bookmobile. So when I got to New York City, and my goal at the time was to be an actor, which I became, I was the classic actor slash, in this case, maitre d', and I could not even maitre d'. I couldn't handle three or four people, you know, at a time, and went on to be a personal trainer instead, because I would deal with one person and one muscle group. But it takes a lot to balance all of that in your head, and it's just beyond, I'm in awe of it. I can't handle it. I don't know how you do it or how Steve does it, but you somehow pull it off. So we are talking to JJ from Spanky's here at Local Matters, and we have a lot more to ask him that I think listeners will want to hear, but we're going to take a short break and come right back.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
Welcome back to Local Matters, where I am in the studio with JJ of the iconic restaurant Spanky's of Cookeville, Tennessee, and it is an iconic place, I must say, and there are iconic restaurants that I've been to that have lines of merchandise, including, I think the one that really started and made it famous was Hard Rock Cafe in New York City, and when people came to visit me in New York City over the years, it was always included a visit to Hard Rock Cafe, and not so much just to have the food or the drink or the experience, but to purchase merchandise to say, I was at Hard Rock Cafe. So you've had little to no merchandise over the years that I can think of, other than a T-shirt that I still have from the 80s, right?
That's pretty true. We had a lot of T-shirts back then, but we haven't had any recently, so.
The T-shirt that I have says on the front, I like it, I love it, I can't get enough of it. And it's been a great conversation starter over the years with people that want to know what it is. And I eventually get around to telling them about this great place in my hometown. And I think a lot of people have come here to visit me want to go to Spanky's in the same way that people that came to visit me in New York wanted to go to Hard Rock Cafe. Do you remember other slogans besides the I like it, I love it, can't get enough of it?
We only used that slogan once, and the rest of them were just logos.
Logos, yeah, yeah. The back of mine reads Spanky's Pizza, and that's what we were referring to before, that you've had periods where you have been literally Spanky's Pizza and just that, right? Just that? Would that be correct in saying you one time just had pizza?
No, we've always done sandwiches with it. We just, every once in a while, I'd have to add something to the menu.
Mm-hmm.
And we just went to pizzas and
yeah.
We made pizzas and tested them on all our friends and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There were some that I made for a group, and I had cut it up and gave them slices and came back, and all the slices were back on the plate. And I said, well, you didn't like that one. And at the time, I had 17 Dobermans that I was feeding because I raised dogs, and I'd always feed them any leftovers we had. So I put that pizza in the pen, and the next morning, it was still there. The dogs wouldn't even eat it. So. Not everything you make is perfect. So.
Well, you know, and the greatest success stories you hear about, most people think are overnight, but they don't realize that so many great success stories in life were preceded by failures, or at least trial and error in your case. So your pizza at some point was so bad the Dobermans wouldn't eat it, but then you perfected a recipe somehow, right?
Yes, we went into a wheat crust, and it was really good, and we used real fresh items and stuff, none of this frozen stuff like they do today, and made our own sauce. That was the hardest part for me because I couldn't quite get that. And then I finally got lucky on one, and so we just kept it.
That's great.
And it worked real well. We did really well with the pizzas. People just keep asking us to do it again, but there's too many pizza places out there now.
When I was going to Spanky's, it was in my college days, which was the early 80s, and you were Spanky's Spuds by then, you know, and you almost always put the two words together, you know. And there's a point at which I remember when the word potato itself would pop into my mind, I would think of Spanky's Spuds before actually picturing a potato. And you created so many of those that, and they were priced so great that us college kids could afford them, and they were full meals for us, you know. So, sure, there are a lot of parents that were indebted to you that didn't know it, that you were helping feed their kids at a price they could afford and keeping them healthy, you know.
Yeah, I can remember the times we went to chicken, and when I first started doing chicken, we didn't sell a lot of it. And so me and my buddies, every night I'd fill up plastic bags with the old chicken and sell it to them for a quarter, and we'd all have dinner.
Well, so you've been a great experimenter over the years and tried several things, and a lot of people wouldn't be willing to try that because, you know, a success, again, is based on a foundation of several failures, I think. Each of those just becomes a boulder in the foundation till you reach, you know, what you are and I think have been for many years now. This menu of yours is so diverse and so great that I think it's sometimes hard to pick just two or three items for me when I go there, you know.
Well, I've been fortunate to do some traveling, and like in New Orleans and down south. And every time we go out and we find something fantastic, I try to replicate it somehow.
Yeah. I think the great thing about your menu also is, you know, there are restaurants that rely on certain gimmicks or fads, one including small bites. We're a small bites restaurant, you know, rather than having entrees. And yours is really both. I've had nights where I've gone in there and I'll have four small bites off of your appetizer menu rather than having an entree, and almost always a dessert, you know. And I would have to tell listeners that don't know, I think your red velvet cake is in my top three red velvet cakes of any restaurant I've ever been to. That's a superb dessert, in my opinion. So thanks for always having that. Again, we're in the studio with JJ of Spanky's restaurant in Cookeville. And in many ways, it epitomizes a phrase from a song that's a theme song for the TV show Cheers. And the lyrics include, "Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name." If listeners to this show read the entire set of lyrics, they'll know that you've always had a knack for meeting the needs of the everybody in that song. Unlike those great party throwers I mentioned before who have no business instincts, it seems you're a great party thrower with great business instincts. Does it feel to you like the customers are sort of family to you, and you're sort of making it feels like you're making a home for them, a home away from home, every night that I'm there?
Well, I've been in it so long, I've made friends with an awful lot of people, and I've hired their children, and I've hired their children's children.
No kidding. Wow. So yeah.
That you can build a big family like that. That's pretty easy.
You seem to have a knack for hiring people with great personality. You know, experience is one thing, but if you don't have the personality for the service industry, you know, a rude wait staff is one of the most unenjoyable things that can happen at a restaurant. And that's never happened at your restaurant ever, even on the busiest night. Maybe that person's had a terrible week and they're having a terrible night, and I've never experienced that. And that's kind of phenomenal. I think that has to do with you picking great personalities.
Well, that's actually Steve that does that, and he's really good at it.
No kidding.
He picks out every waitstaff.
Well, that's just an extension of what you did, though. In other words, you picked a great personality, Steve, and therefore, you know, it's like you built this family. The restaurant itself is this family, as you said. It's a person, their children, and their grandchildren, and then the customers become this loyal fan base where we all feel like we're in a place where everybody knows our name, you know, and that's always been something I've been in awe of. I mean, I'm the worst at remembering names, especially in multitudes, you know, and Steve just seems to know everybody's name from the moment they walk in there.
He's superb at it. He really is good at it.
Yeah, that's true. You know, years ago, I remember there being structures attached to or directly beside your building, one of which was either what we used to call a head shop and or record store and possibly a hair salon. Were you involved in any of those businesses?
Well, no, but some of my friends were. A Hair of Time was the hair stop that was there, the big building. And then between it was just the gap between the two buildings, and a friend of mine named Fred Matheny, of all people, wanted to put a shop in there, and so we put a little roof over the top of it, and he put records all down the hall, and we called it the Hall of Records.
The Hall of Records. I remember being so skinny, you know, and that was kind of unique and a fun experience. And was it all connected, I think, by a front porch? Would that be right, or something to that effect?
It was just a door there.
Okay.
Wasn't much.
And then the patio outside, which has become its own iconic outdoor, you know, place to sit and eat, an outdoor patio. When did that go in?
Well, it was, and at one time we had a built framed patio out there, just all wood, and we took it all down when it started just tearing up. And then we decided to go with rock, and some of my friends were in construction, so they came out there and they helped me put that patio down. And we had a garden out there for a long time, and then we decided that we wanted to have people that could come when it rained and stuff like that instead of making the inside so crowded. And so we put a tent on it, and we haven't taken it down since.
Right. And have had some of the best live music in the area for some time now. How long have you had live music or performers there?
Golly, it's
Years, yeah. And some of the best. I mean, I've seen some great, great talent up there. So
there's been some really good people.
Does somebody go about choosing who plays there, or do musicians come in and you say, get up and give it a shot and see how you do? Or
Steve does a lot of that, but more than likely it's somebody that we've known or heard somewhere else, and we know how good they are. We have a lot of people that write us and want to play there, but if they don't have some kind of music or come play and let us hear it, we're not going to bring it.
Yeah. And it seems so smart. You've got it separated from the interior. When you're inside, you can hear a little bit of the music. But outdoors on the patio, it's almost like one of those famous little concert venues in New York City, a club that's just known for having live music. And yet it's just out there on the patio. And so it's almost its separate entity and yet fully integrated with the restaurant as well, which is kind of a great thing, I think, you know.
Well, for years we even did big bands and things like that, but we don't do that anymore because we got a neighbor that had some kids, and the little baby was waking up at night, so we decided we'd just go to single artists and maybe two people at the most, just because we wanted to protect our neighbor.
Yeah. And then when you think about that, there were buildings there to the left of you, which is now the parking lot, and that parking lot is packed on nights. And you know, a lot of us park. I just immediately park down the street. Being a New Yorker and a Chicago person, I like walking. So I don't park near the restaurant for the most part. I just park down the street and walk, you know. But it's almost as though you need more parking at some point soon, right, if you're going to keep going at this rate.
Well, we've got that big lot back there, and we've talked about it.
Okay, good. Well, I hope you and Spanky's will be around for years to come. I know I plan on going there till I'm at least 100. Without it, I, as a bad cook, will probably starve to death. And I just want to thank you for coming in and talking about Spanky's and being with us today on Local Matters.
Well, thank you for asking me.